That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, here to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to make you better with your money. It's a big promise, but it's a promise that I stand by every single Monday, and it's one that I will stand by for every single show until the end of time. That's how long this show will last for. Anyway, here this week, we have a lot to discuss when it comes to personal finance, the economy. So to give you guys a little bit of insight, if this is your first time here, let me hold your hand and take you through what we do on this show. We start off by taking a look at what's been happening in the news, in the economy, things that actually affect the money in your pocket. No boring news on this show. I'd say it's normally good and fun stuff, but it's the world of money, so it's very unpredictable. And, you know, the past few years haven't been too good. So we'll find out what happens there. And then we like to bring in a range of experts, famous guests, you know, industry leaders to share their own personal finance advice, experience, and stories that they can teach to make you better with money. And coming up this week, we've got Riley Solferini. You might know him on socials as @TheMortgageMan. Wonder what he's going to be talking about. Yep, so he's a mortgage advisor. If you didn't figure that one out very quickly, then no judgment. And he's going to talk to us about, well, you guessed it, the housing market and how you can save to get onto the property ladder. And also we have Sarah Williams, a debt advisor of more than 20 years and the founder of the finance blog Debt Camel. Anyone read that one? I hope you do. And if you don't, well, you might after this show. And of course, she's going to come and help us understand the best strategies to pay off your debt. So everyone, shall we kick off with the news and someone that can't keep themselves out of the news at the moment? Mr. Donald Trump. Now, I would love to bring up his appearance at the Super Bowl last night, but I didn't watch it. I mean, I watched the halftime show on YouTube this morning because I, you know, actually value my sleep and don't really want to start watching something at 11:30 at night. And also to anyone out here that thinks that the Super Bowl is bigger than the World Cup final, just going to leave it there. I'm just going to leave it there. You know what you are. You know what you are. I feel like I've just upset the entire American listener group that listen to this podcast. I apologise, but this is a British show, so hopefully there's not that many of you. And all you Brits can rally behind me. But what has he done or what is he doing? So, unless you've had your head in the sand, Donald Trump has been implementing or talking about tariffs. He loves tariffs. I'm fairly certain that a few weeks ago, if not a few months ago, he said that the word tariff was the most beautiful word in the English language. Not sure I agree. I quite like the word chocolate more than tariff. I had to come up with something on the whim just then, so please don't judge me. But I'm not going to back down. Chocolate is a nicer word than tariff. But sorry about that. I clearly just had a chocolate bar, guys. It's very much on my mind. What's he been doing with tariffs and what in particular is going on in the news? Well, it's actually British fashion retailers who are scrambling to fight the chaos that's been caused by these tariffs. So, like I said, unless you had your head in the sand, Donald Trump has been threatening, potentially implementing a range of tariffs against a bunch of countries. For example, he has already imposed an additional 10% tariff on Chinese-made goods. That's an additional one on top of any tariffs that already exist. You know, the US and China, when it comes to trade and wars, you know, they've got a little bit of a history there, let's say. There were threats against Canada and Mexico that were delayed or pushed down the line. I'm not sure how long, but basically they're going to come up again in a few months or a month or so. The UK, are there going to be tariffs against the UK? We're not so sure. I'm fairly certain even today there's been additional tariffs against steel and other materials, which has just caused chaos again. Because essentially what is happening is retailers just do not know what is going to happen if they send stuff to the US. So for those of you that don't know, let me quickly give you like a 10-second explainer on a tariff. A tariff is just an additional tax imposed on a good imported into a country paid by the person importing it. So the people in the US, if a 10% tariff is put on an £100 product coming from the UK, the person buying it in the US has to now pay £110, essentially incentivizing them, in Donald Trump's eyes, to buy it from American suppliers with zero tariffs rather than UK suppliers with a 10% tariff. That's a made-up scenario. There isn't a 10% tariff at the moment on UK suppliers. But what is happening in terms of the British retailers is they're currently trying to figure out, do they need to restructure the way that they operate in the US, or maybe pause exports altogether, all because of this chaos and uncertainty by Donald Trump's tariffs. One thing in particular that has caused chaos was that literally last week, Donald Trump scrapped and then reimposed a tariff called the, I'm going to absolutely butcher this, I'm fairly certain it's Latin, but de minimis, which basically allows packages of goods worth less than $800 to be imported without being subject to import duty. So he got rid of this, meaning that you did still now have to pay import duty on things less than $800, then backtracked because the US Postal Service basically shut down because they could not handle the amount of tariffs they had to deal with under that value. So things are going all over the place. Next in particular, you've heard of Next, the retail store Next. They are currently considering establishing a US corporate entity to mitigate the impact, whereas Superdry have stopped shipping China-made products directly to the US because of this 10% tariff. So you can see retailers are all over the place. They do not know what to do. A lot of companies are putting things on pause, sending them to the US just while they try and figure out what's going on, because you might have a massive shipment on its way to the US, and by the time it gets there, there'll be a different tariff altogether, essentially making that product completely worthless to you, in fact costing you more than it actually costs to send there. Another idea of why companies are basically creating US entities of themselves is because then they can send products to the US at cost, not at the price they're selling them at, but at cost. So the tariff impact is much less. So you can see there's a whole bunch of things going on. And for anyone that would like me to summarize the exact situation out there, I would use the word chaos. It is absolute chaos. No one knows what tariffs are going to be imposed on who, when, where, why, what, how, when, and where. And yes, I am aware that I said when and where twice. So keep an eye out for this story. It is a developing one, and I'll keep you as up to date as I can. And if you are a British retail store, feel free to DM us on at That Money Show and jump on and let us know what you are currently doing to deal with it. We will happily talk to you at Next, guys. Come and have a chat on That Money Show. What else is happening? Deep breath. Okay, let's come back to the UK. Let's reel it back in. Enough of the US. We have our own stories, okay, guys? We are a beautiful island nation with very high house prices. In fact, record high house prices, as the average UK home, according to Halifax, I should always say, because different companies have different amounts, has now hit £299,138. We are so close to the £300,000 mark. And I'm not saying that like I want to get there. I'm just saying we are very close to hitting a threshold that has not been seen before in terms of average UK house prices. So how big is this rise? What are we looking at? Well, it's a 0.7% rise month on month. So since December, it was a 0.2% in drop in December. So now we've gone from a drop to a rise. So things are going all over the place. And it's a 3% rise on an annual basis. So what's actually going on? How's the housing market looking overall? Because this is just a figure. A lot of you might be like, well, house prices go up anyway because of inflation and all that kind of stuff. And you would be right on the most part, because no, you cannot buy, you know, a £10,000 house like your grandparents might have bought 50 years ago. Bring me a time machine right now, am I right? Anyway, Amanda Bryden, who's the head of mortgages at Halifax, has said the housing market has started on a positive note. I assume the more houses that sell, the better Halifax do. And the higher they sell for, the higher the mortgages and the lending that they get through. So, of course, it would be a positive note for them at Halifax. And an additional note from her is that affordability is still a challenge for many would-be buyers, but the market's resilience is noteworthy. So this is something that's been really indicative here in the UK, that whatever kind of house surges, house price rises, mortgage issues, you know, mortgage lenders are getting tighter, interest rates going up, going down, it just seems we have a really resilient housing market that just seems to keep trickling up and up and up. Don't know why. Maybe we're just a very attractive country. An additional note from Amanda was that there's strong demand for new mortgages and growth in lending. With a stamp duty increase looming, some of this demand may have come from first-time buyers eager to complete transactions before the end of March, despite geopolitical uncertainties, Mr. Trump, and waning consumer confidence. Other key indicators look fairly positive for the housing market. So Why are housing prices so high right now? And is it just inflation? Well, there's a lot of kind of things happening right now, which is why we have such a strong housing market. Let's start with the stamp duty cuts. So stamp duty, we're currently in the middle of a stamp duty holiday. And at the end of March, literally the last day of March, these stamp duty levels drop back down, which means that if you're buying pretty much a property of any price over £300,000, you'll be paying an increased amount of stamp duty on that property come April this year. So you might be seeing a bit of a rush to the market from people who wanted to get a house purchase over the line basically in the next month and a half. That's factor number one. You know, when people are trying to push through house purchases, sellers have a little bit more power, prices go up. We've also had the big announcement last week. I think it was on Thursday, I want to say, that interest rates were cut by the Bank of England. That was almost felt like a weekly story last year. And now it's actually, you know, like page three of the news, which is great stuff. But we're down at 4.5% Bank of England's interest rate. As interest rates tend to go up, house demand, or the demand to purchase house prices, also tends to go up. I meant house interest rates go down. You got to bear with me. Sometimes, you know, I say up, sometimes I say down. You know which way I'm going. But as interest rates go down, house prices start to go up as demand starts to increase again in the market. We're down at 4.5%. And the indication is there are going to be potentially two or three more cuts this year. Again, probably strengthening the housing market. There's also a big push by the government and by banks to try and make it easier for people to get mortgages. So this general like increase in demand for housing prices for houses increase prices. Now, one of the biggest issues, again, is why housing keeps going up and up and up, is the lack of supply in this country. So one thing that would slow down this rapid escalation in house prices in this country is if we got more houses. More houses, more supply, which means lower prices. Now, we do have a government plan, apparently, to build 1.5 million houses during this Labour government. I would love to know the current count on that. I'm fairly certain it is close to zero, or you could probably round it to zero. So let's see if they actually follow through on that. And I would be very interested to come back in a few years' time to actually see the effect of this. Well, if they do come through with it and actually do these 1.5 million houses, your guess is as good as mine as to actually whether they do that or not. But to see the effect on the housing market and pricing. But as we can see, and as Amanda Bryden, the head of Mortgages at Halifax, says, we're in a very resilient housing market right now, which explains why we keep seeing record high after record high. And a last question for you is about energy suppliers. Well, apparently there's a massive scramble to install smart meters in the UK homes. Smart meters have just been, it feels like a massive mess. People have them, and they kind of like them when they have them, but they also seem to have a lot of problems. The government set a target in 2011 that every UK home would have a smart meter by 2019. Come 2020, and they lowered this target to 75% of homes by 2020. The target is now to hit that 75% by the end of 2025. We're currently at around 60%. So they have 11 months to increase it by 15%. That is, if I do my maths correctly, around 10 million smart meters that need to be installed. I might be off there, but 10 million people need to get smart meters. Good luck to the British government. And if you have had any smart meter issues, because there are some really interesting stories, again, do DM us on Instagram at That Money Show. We would love to hear your story about smart meters. The classic question, do they lower energy bills? No, they're just meant to track them correctly so you pay an accurate bill. So don't think that installing a smart meter necessarily means that your energy price is going to drop rapidly. All right, guys, stick around, because after this, I'm going to be joined by Riley Solferini, the mortgage man, a mortgage advisor, and specialist to talk about the housing market. We'll catch you then.
FUPAR Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio.
It got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed, all the OGs had gone, and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23 and was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
Politics Uncensored.
They can't turn off your water because water is a human right. It's not like internet, which we can talk about.
Are you saying we should all stop paying?
I'm not saying we should all stop paying. I think no one should have to pay.
Their argument would be prices are going up. We need all this money because we have to invest in our ageing Victoria infrastructure, which hasn't, there's been no new infrastructure built in sewage, whatever, since the Victorian era. How would you respond to that?
They're talking out of their backside. It's bullshit of the highest order.
What the hell with Gabby Allen?
Mr. Later Williams, hello! Mate, can we just address that you did Strictly Come Dancing?
I know, people were quite upset about that, to be fair, but listen, not the first musical theatre performer to be on Strictly, it won't be the last. I've never watched a full season from the start to the end. So when it actually got 2 hours, I was like, whoa, like, there's so many different styles. I was like, oh, and Nikita, I love him, but he was really pushing me to be the best that I could be.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And it is time to talk houses. I just told you that they have hit a record high of just over £299,000 on average in the UK. And on top of that, it seems that the latest statistics are first-time buyers have to save for 11 years now to get on a property ladder. Is it even possible anymore? Anyway, lucky for me, I've got a mortgage advisor and specialist on the show right now, Mr. Riley Solferini, the mortgage man. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, good. Thank you. Yourself? It's been a little bit of time. Nice to be back.
It's great to have you on the show again. And apparently you're calling in, well, you're one of the furthest ever phone calls into the show, I believe. Where are you at the moment?
Currently in Iceland. I'm just, you know, by a waterfall just now, so can't see it, of course, but I've got to have all the gear on, so yeah, it's pretty cold.
Got it. Listen, this is now a international show. We travel all over Europe. Unbelievable. How are the house prices in Iceland at the moment, or no comment?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was something I was actually going to look up before I came on, but yeah, I didn't get the chance to. But yeah, I'll find out if I end up finding them.
That's all right. I think our Icelandic listeners will forgive you on this case scenario, because we are in particular talking about the British market. And as you probably know, we've hit record highs yet again, record after record at the moment, 299,000. I'm surprised we didn't break through the 300 mark, to be honest, with average house prices. And whilst that obviously is an incredible amount of money, a lot of listeners on this show are potential to be first-time buyers, and they're hearing that and they're going, right, crap, that's even more expensive than I wanted it to be. So what's going on? Why have we hit this record high? Are we in a bit of a bubble right now, or again, is this just normality and is this something we have to accept?
It's an interesting one. A lot of people think that there's going to be a bubble, and if it bursts, then house prices will mass drastically. But during 2008 financial crash, when it all really went to pot, you didn't really see prices just drop. They kind of slowly and gradually came down. They only went down by about 15 to nearly 18% in some of the worst cases. So if you're waiting for something like that, then you're going to be, I think you're going to be waiting for a very, very long time. I always see people sometimes getting priced out because they are trying to wait for the perfect time, but there is no perfect time because it's either going to be interest rates are high, so the house prices are kind of slowing down, or the house prices are quite low because interest rates are low. No, house prices are high because interest rates are low. So, you know, there is no kind of perfect time. I think it's whenever you feel ready, I think you should just bite the bullet if it's long, as long as it's going to be something sustainable to you. But I don't think it's necessarily going to get any lower as such. I think it will either stay the same or maybe increase gradually over the coming years.
Well, I can't believe you probably just answered the hardest question that anyone ever has to answer on this question to do with houses, which is when is the right time to buy? And you've just gone straight in there with that one, being like, guys, it's when you can afford it, which is the perfect answer, to be honest. Because like you said, if you're waiting for house prices to drop, demand might start to go up and it becomes a more competitive market. Mortgage prices are also swinging sideways or up and down, potentially counteracting whatever house prices you're actually going to get. So that's a brilliant initial piece of advice to kick off with. So I appreciate you diving into the deep end. So first time buyers, 11 years to get on the property ladder. Is it harder than ever for first time buyers to try and achieve this big goal of owning a property?
Well, I mean, considering the house prices are higher than ever, it's technically going to be harder than ever. They kind of go hand in hand, really. The good thing is, though, is that whilst it has been harder to build deposits, like you say, there are kind of schemes that can help you build deposits faster, like ELISA, which, you know, is a government-backed scheme. If you put up to £4,000 in it per year, per tax year, that is, then you can get a £1,000 bonus completely for free from the government as long as you are using it towards your deposit. And these can't really... they can't be used for solicitor's fees or other fees as such either. So you do need to be aware of that. You need to factor that in as an extra part. You can't use this bonus for your fees. But, you know, there are other aspects where other lenders are giving more flexibility to first-time buyers as well to kind of help them out, you know, a bit with affordability. Because that was, I think, I've seen a recent study that showed for 50% of people that were not going to be buying the next 5 years, I think 47% of that 50 said it was because of affordability. So other lenders giving schemes to help affordability is obviously trying to aid first-time buyers onto what is already a pretty difficult market.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant that you raised a few of those, like you mentioned, schemes that are available to assist younger people, first-time buyers, to get onto the market. I would highly insist that anyone that hasn't heard of a lifetime ISA to look into the product. It seems to become less and less helpful for people that live in the southeast and London, with house prices rocketing up and a limit on that product of £425,000 at the moment. But nonetheless, it is a worthwhile product that is worth knowing about, because who doesn't want a nice 25% bonus on their cash? And like you said, are we starting to see a little bit of an ease in the way that mortgage lenders are looking at first-time buyers? There was this article out a few weeks ago about how they're trying to, you know, maybe increase multipliers, or, you know, be a little less strict and stringent around the borrowing or the lending that they're going to be starting to implement. I know that kind of gives people flashbacks to 2008, but hopefully done in a safe way, this will help first-time buyers again.
Yeah, I mean, last time in 2008, what the thing was back then that really didn't help is that sometimes it wasn't done by multiples. There's something called a self-cert mortgage, which allowed you to essentially say, as long as you sign on the dotted paper and say you can afford it, they'll give it to you regardless of the income. So, you know, it seems like such a crazy thing to think of now, but it was kind of one of the reasons why everything did go to pot back then. Nowadays, you know, people are able to afford these 5.5 times, and it seems crazy that I'm saying that, but there's a lot of people who are stripping back certain aspects of lifestyle to afford rent, which is higher than a lot of mortgage payments in some instances. And whilst, you know, there's instances where there's people paying £1,000 in rent and they still have a really pretty comfortable life, but they can't get a mortgage for £800-900 because it's outside of the normal multipliers. So, you know, it's an interesting one, but there are lenders that have, like you're saying, given a bit of ease to first-time buyers where they're giving these higher income multiples with certain thresholds of household income. So as an example, Leeds came in recently with having a minimum of £40,000 per annum as a household to potentially get up to 5.5 times borrowing power as a first-time buyer. And that includes employed and self-employed, unlike Nationwide's Helping Hand, where you have to be employed. So there are more lenders coming into that market to give first-time buyers a bit of a hand.
Brilliant. All right. So if someone is listening to this, they've heard what you said about there is never a perfect time to enter the market and there are some products to help them. Can you kind of give a bit of a first few steps that someone can take if they are interested in getting onto the housing market, but they just don't understand the product, they don't know where to start, who maybe they should talk to, and I suppose just generally give them that initial push to kick off this process?
Yeah, sure. So I think your first step is really to chat to an advisor, whether they are free or a feed one. You know, they're the two different types. You can do whatever feels right to you. I think chatting to one of them is definitely going to put you in the best position, and you don't need to go when you think you're ready. You can go have a chat initially. Most consultations, or just about all of us really, are completely free for consultations, just to find out what is doable. You might find something that is more doable than you thought, or you might find it's a little bit out of reach and it can change your perspective on what is needed to go forward. So I think it's always really important to start there, you know, and even if you don't do that, I guess the next step that comes with it is getting an agreement in principle, which you can get from every lender, but each of them have their own different affordability models, their own criteria, and there's a ton of different factors that go into it. So that's, again, why an advisor can be best, because they can make your affordability work the most for you. If you get one of these agreement in principles, and then you can go start house hunting within the budget, because it will tell you your budget. That's what the agreement in principle will do. Mm-hmm. It'll tell you your budget. It means you've already been credit checked, and then you will be able to add this to your deposit to understand your total borrowing power. Go out, estate agents will start looking at you seriously because you've got one of these already, and you can start bidding on houses, and then it's applying and getting the solicitor sorted at the same time. So there's a lot to go through, but it can be broken really once you've got in hand and is someone to take you through it, like an advisor as such, then you can go step by step and they'll hold your hand all the way through.
Yeah, I like one thing that you mentioned in particular is mortgage advisors come in many shapes and sizes. They can be free, they can be paid for services, but like, if it is for you to have that initial free consultation to get you into the process, please don't like be shy of contacting or reaching out to anyone. I mean, you can DM at the mortgage man right sat right here in front of us right now, and like we said, he can even point you in the right direction. Whether or not he's your mortgage advisor at the end of the day is a different question, but I'm sure he'd be more than happy to help out with your specific scenario. There might not be some kind of like magic wand or, you know, like golden key to that transition someone from a potential buyer into a buyer. But have you seen any kind of single element that essentially takes someone from thinking they're never going to achieve this big goal of purchasing a property to actually turning it into a bit of a practical dream? Is there like a specific kind of tip you can give to someone that can get them, you know, from one position to the other?
It leads kind of back onto what I previously mentioned was the idea, and I know I might sound quite biased, of course, but it is the idea of chatting to a broker, because there has been situations where I'm sure I've done the same and many other folk have done the same, where you think something isn't possible and then it turns out very much to be possible because you've just got someone who knows exactly what is needed for you, you know, whether it's been previous credit problems that you don't think are possible on a certain amount of deposit, or your affordability where you're in a super high commission job like an estate agent or a car salesman, or you're on a lower income and you just want to understand what is going to be doable and just to find out what you think is going to be possible. I think that is obviously one of the biggest ones, is just finding out if it is doable in the first place, because there's a lot of people that think it's not, and then they find out it is very doable, and then things change very quickly to knowing from when you do know that it is possible versus not possible. So I think the number one tip generally is to contact an advisor, and if it's deposit that you're struggling with, I would say looking at that LISA is a great option. It really is probably one of the best ones out there. But obviously, if you're in the southeast and the south in general, then the house prices are so massive that it might be outside the limitations of what's possible. So do double check and read through it properly before you start looking to go into the depths with it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And unlike Riley, I'm not a mortgage advisor. I have no skin in the game when it comes to this one. I can confirm that speaking to a professional, like I've said, like a lot of them will offer you either a completely free service from start to finish. And your question is, if something is free, you are the product. Well, the truth is that the ones that do offer free services get paid by the banks once they kind of complete your mortgage, and that's who's paying them. So there's literally zero cost to you, and they'll always try, or the good ones will always try and offer you the best product regardless of, you know, the commission that they might take out of it. So that's a really important thing to note. And I'm saying that to you from someone that's not a good mortgage advisor. Whether or not you end up doing it yourself or not, the mortgage advisor at least can push you in the right way. So Riley, I've got your back there. Just because you are, you know, at the mortgage man doesn't mean that you're speaking, or people should take what you're saying with a pinch of salt, because I'm 100% behind you as well. And I think this is the case in most things with personal finance. For example, like if you're in serious levels of debt and you think you're never going to get out of that hole, you know, speaking to a charity or, you know, Citizens Advice or whatever it is, and getting an alternative opinion from a professional will open up a lot of doors that you might not have known even existed in the first place. And it's exactly the same in the mortgage world. So even if you think you're a million miles away, you can have that conversation and you can understand, you know, a road or the path that will get you from A to B, from not having the idea that you'll ever be on the property market to getting there one day. So that's really important. I'm going to ask you one final question, which is, I suppose, what are the risks? So we've spoken a lot about the positives, all of the good things. What's just something that people should keep an eye out for when it comes to purchasing a property?
I think when you're actually purchasing the property itself, is asking the right questions and what you can do to mitigate risk. So it can be things like, why is the seller selling? How rushed are they? You know, how long has the property been on the market? If it's been on the market for a while, that might mean that the seller's wanting to sell quite soon. So, you know, you can find out these questions and you can kind of give yourself a bit of leverage in understanding if you could maybe put in something slightly lower, so you're getting a price off of the house a little bit. So that's always a positive. Putting in extra deposit can decrease the rates that you get. So interest rates, so it can lower your monthly payments. You can also get surveys done for the house as well. These can be something that's really important, where you get someone professionally to go in to look at the house to make sure it is all, like, everything is in working order exactly as you expect it. And one other thing to probably mention in particular is actually looking at the boiler. The boiler is like an interesting one, where it, sometimes they don't mention it because it's not been changed for 15 years, and then you buy it and you have to spend $2,000-$3,000 on changing it out. So that's, it's a small one, but definitely double check on that one. But also, negative equity can potentially be a thing that is seen with mortgages. So especially if you're going for the high loan to value and low deposit mortgages, if your house decreases in value, you might end up owing slightly more on it than what you would than what you've actually purchased it for. But yep, this doesn't really happen that often, but it is something obviously to make sure that you are trying to mitigate, at least.
Absolutely. I really like everything you said. I think to kind of summarise, buying a property for 99.9% of people is the biggest purchase you will ever make in your life. And I think to summarise everything you just said, it's take your time with it. Ask as many questions as you can. Do all the like research and surveys as you can. Because like you said, you're not dropping a couple of £100,000 on, you know, just anything. This is crazy money, life-changing money. So make sure that you're making the right decision and take your time with it. Don't feel rushed or pressured in any scenario. Riley, thank you so much. People can find you on socials at The Mortgage Man, is that correct?
Correct, that's on TikTok and Instagram. Feel free to drop in. I do some live streams, so I answer questions every day. So
lovely. And enjoy Iceland. Sorry for disturbing your holiday.
So good, no worries.
Well, there you go, there was Riley calling all the way in from Iceland. We don't do it much better than that. I don't even know why he picked up the phone, to be honest. He said he was out next to a waterfall whilst discussing mortgages. That's the devotion of Riley as a mortgage advisor. Anyway, it's time for Money Tip of the Week, where I like to give you something short, something snappy, something practical for you to take away, so you can immediately be better with your money right now. And I mentioned it about 20 minutes ago or 15 minutes ago. Interest rates have dropped. We are now at 4.5% set by the Bank of England, which means that if you are a saver right now, your interest rate, if you have an easy access account or cash ISA, is likely to drop pretty rapidly. So my one tip to you right now is, please go out, check if this has happened to your account, and immediately look to see if there is a better somewhere available for you. You should still be getting above 4% at least on your savings rate in an easy access account. And if you are not, We don't need loyalty in the game. When it comes to like finance, when it comes to savings accounts, it's all about getting the best product and service available to you. As long as they're FCA regulated and FSCS protected, please make sure you're getting the best interest rates on the market, and don't just accept the fact that your current provider is dropping their rate. Anyway, up next, I'm going to be joined by Sarah Williams, a debt advisor of more than 20 years and the founder of the finance blog Debt Camel. Stick around. It's going to be a good one.
Fubar Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
And we've got Miss Chloe Brockett in the studio.
But it got to the point where I wasn't enjoying it as much as I used to. I used to love it. You know, it was my life. I wasn't in relationships because I was going on TOWIE. I wasn't, you know, invested in anything other than the show because I loved it so much. And then as I got older, I just didn't enjoy it anymore. I noticed that the cast around me had changed. All the OGs had gone and I'd all of a sudden become an OG at 23 and was a bit like, you know what, I don't think this is for me anymore.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
Politics Uncensored.
They can't turn off your water because water is a human right. It's not like internet, which we can talk about.
Are you saying we should all stop paying?
I'm not saying we should all stop paying. I think no one should have to pay.
Their argument would be prices are going up. We need all this money because we have to invest in our ageing Victoria infrastructure, which hasn't, there's been no new infrastructure built in sewage, whatever, since the Victorian era. How would you respond to that?
They're talking out of their backside. It's bullshit of the highest order.
What the hell with Gabby Allen?
Mr. Later Williams, hello! Mate, can we just address that? You did Strictly Come Dancing.
I know, people were quite upset about that, to be fair, but listen, not the first musical theatre performer to be on Strictly, it won't be the last. I've never watched a full season from the start to the end. So when it actually got to me, I was like, whoa, like, there's so many different styles. I was like, oh, and Nikita, I love him, but he was really pushing me to be the best that I could be.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And joining me now on the show is Sarah Williams, a debt advisor of more than 20 years and the founder of the finance blog Debt Camel. Sarah, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Well, actually, I've got a bit of a cold. Let's not talk about that.
Let's not talk about the negative things. We've all got a bit of a cold. It's February in the UK. It's pretty miserable outside. And I think what we're going to try and do today with you, and I suppose this is probably what you've been doing for the past 20 years, is trying to make debt a topic that we talk more about so that people that do have these scenarios are able to find solutions. Because I think that's a really important aspect, to not shy away from a topic that is so taboo. So I want to kick off with asking you about the blog, Debt Camel, and what it does, who it's for, and how it's helped people over the past few years.
Okay, so I started it about 11, 12, 13 years ago.
Lovely.
I was an advisor at Citizens Advice, and I got fed up with people coming to see me too late when they already had massive problems, when it would have been a lot easier and they would have more nicer options if they come earlier. So I thought, why not set up a website? It's got sensible debt advice on it, but it's got, you know, a few pictures, exclamation marks, common sense. It's not quite as boring as the big national debt charities.
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing. People often don't start thinking about managing debt until it's a little bit too late, and they don't want to talk to someone in particular until it's too late. Whereas, like you said, if you can catch them at the right moment, you can turn what is a small minor problem with plenty of solutions and plenty of ways to fix it before it becomes, you know, something that's much more difficult to manage. There are still solutions, but they require, you know, a lot more sacrifice.
Yeah, and the internet's perfect for that. So, you know, somebody can actually just look at something, you know, in their own leisure time. They don't have to go and, you know, sit in somebody's citizen's advice waiting room.
Yeah, I agree. And again, people, debt is a sensitive topic, right? So to actually speak to someone out loud about it is sometimes, you know, admitting that there is a problem in the first place, which is quite hard. Whereas a Google search, quite easy. And hopefully it incentivizes more people to kind of deal with the problem at an earlier stage. So what are some of the most common debt types here in the UK that people are struggling with?
Well, I think probably credit cards are the biggest menace. And certainly they're the ones that are the easiest to get into. Credit cards and catalogues and buy now, pay later. They're just kind of thrown at you, and they just seem normal when you're in your early 20s. And they can build up and build up, and suddenly a lot of your income is going on repaying these.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, I know some young people that are scared of credit cards because they've heard of the things that happen when it comes to debt. And I know a lot of people that get a credit card without any understanding of what the product is, how it works, and, you know, the reason behind it. There are literally people that exist, and I'm not trying to embarrass people because this is just due to a lack of financial education, that believe credit cards are free money. It's just, you know, your bank is lending you money and you don't even know if you need to pay it back in the first place. And then the moment you do, it can be too late. So this is just part
And overdrafts as well.
Oh, overdrafts, so, of course.
Classic, you know, students, overdrafts, get given a credit card by the bank as well. Well, a couple of years later, credit cards maxed out, and you say, what did you buy with it? And all they can remember are a few pizzas and drinks. They've no idea what the rest went on.
So if you are someone that is in some level of debt, but, like, you know, you don't really think that it's an issue right now, you think everyone's in a bit of debt, like, what's the harm? What are some of the signs or indicators that potentially you're in a situation that requires you to take action now, and you might be in a little bit of trouble?
Okay, so I think the best test is when somebody thinks, well, I'm just about all right, is go for 2 months without using any credit at all. So don't use that credit card. Don't use Klarna. If you can get through 2 months making all your minimum payments and not using credit at all, then I'll possibly believe you that you're okay. But if you can't, then the answer is that you're making all the minimum payments, you think it's all right, but you're then going back in again and you're using the cards and you're using more buy now, pay later to get through. And that's not okay because it's not really clearing the debts at all.
Absolutely. And what about to people that have the ability to pay off debt? So what I mean by that is they've been in debt, they've got themselves out of debt, then they find themselves back in debt. They can get themselves out of it. And they say to themselves, you know, I'm in debt now, but I know I've got the ability to get out of it. But they just seem to be stuck in this recurring loop that when they get themselves out of it, they go back into it.
Well, somebody's got to want it to change. Mm-hmm. You know, you see people, they've had credit card debt and they've consolidated it into a loan. Then they use the cards again. Then they get another consolidation loan. By the time you get to the third one, they're kind of, you know, a little voice in their head is thinking, didn't seem to work right the last few times. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to want to stop. And it's like a light bulb sometimes is going on in your head that you just think, enough.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to spend the next 30 years living like this.
No, who does? Okay, so we'll definitely have some listeners who are listening to the show right now who are in debt, who maybe this is the first time they've had an open conversation about the topic. They are thinking to themselves, you know, like, it would be nice to get myself out of this situation that I'm currently in, but I've never felt comfortable opening up or talking to someone about it. I'd rather just know a few steps, actions that I can to put myself in the right direction. So what are some debt solutions available to anyone in any position?
Okay, so if you can pay the minimums and also have enough money to live on, mm-hmm. and that includes things like, a bit of entertainment and a few clothes and some money for Christmas, if you can do all that and you can still make overpayments, the best option for you is to overpay your debts.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they will start dropping. You stop using the cards and you overpay the cards. They really will start dropping, and you can watch every month that the interest being added is actually going down, and that's quite satisfying. It takes a while, but it gets faster as you go on because, you're having less interest added. So that is called, some people call it snowballing, and it really does work if you've got that spare money.
Yeah.
If you don't have any spare money for that, and if you can't make the minimum payments, or if you got behind with bills, rent, council tax, energy bills, then you need more help. Then the key thing to ask yourself is, could I manage if all the interest on my debts was stopped? I could pay off the balances, but I just can't manage when they keep adding interest on.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that's you, talk to Step Change,
mm-hmm.
and they can set up a debt management plan for you where the new interest that's being added to your overdrafts or your credit cards is stopped, and you can just make one affordable payment a month, which is then divided up between all your creditors.
I love that. I think this is a really useful piece of information for people out there that think, I'm stuck. I'm just stuck, and it just seems to get worse and worse, and there's no solution for someone like me. The truth is, please pick up the phone, like you said, to Step Change or to Citizens Advice or to someone that has a bit of knowledge on the industry and will be able to see things from a different perspective to you and will actually know tactical, practical solutions that can solve Absolutely. Things. And, there are so many solutions in terms of, moving your balance, to a 0% credit card for a few months or for a few years to get you to pay it off.
That can work as well if you've got a good credit rating.
Exactly.
And you can get offered one. So, there is a help out there. One of the tricky things about this is you can't believe everything you see mm-hmm. on the internet, because there are a lot of commercial firms out there that try to make it sound like they're like Step Change or Citizens Advice, and they'll give you good advice. But some of them will only be recommending solutions which are in their best interest.
Oof.
So Step Change run these debt management plans. They've got hundreds of thousands of people on them very happily. And they don't charge for those. So all your money each month is divided between your creditors. But there are other firms that run what look like very similar debt management plans. They are exactly similar, except they charge you for it.
Got it.
So some of your money each month is going to the firms, which means it just takes longer to clear those debts. So you want to avoid those people, and you also want to avoid probably anyone which suggests you get what is called an IVA, an individual voluntary arrangement. That is a form of insolvency, mm-hmm. like bankruptcy. It has the same effect on your credit record as bankruptcy does. And it's intended for people who have got a lot of assets to protect, a house with equity, a car, a valuable car, or they're in a partnership, or they're a solicitor or an MP, people that just aren't allowed to go bankrupt. This is what IVAs were designed for. But instead, they're now being sold to people that have got £8,000 worth of debts, and they're living in a council house, and they don't have any assets to protect at all, because it generates really large fees for the people setting them up. So Citizens Advice is great. Step Change are great. National Debt Line is also very good if you'd like to talk to somebody on the phone about Brilliant. Your debts. Those are all very good people to get advice from. You can find me on Instagram at @debtcamel. I can't give you full debt advice on Instagram, but I can point you in the direction of who would be the best people to talk to in your particular situation.
There you go. I love it. Listen, on That Money Show, we try and make sure that even if you aren't someone that wants to speak out loud about a problem, you can at least know the solutions. And Sarah, I think you provided a number of brilliant ideas and potential next steps for someone listening. So thank you so much for your time. And again, they can find you on socials and on the website at Deck Camel. So do go and check Sarah out. And thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Gabriel.
So there you go, guys. Debt. It's a horrible topic to talk about. It's a horrible situation to be in, but there are solutions. So please do not feel alone. And like we mentioned, a number of free resources for you to get stuck into. It is worth noting, not all debt is bad. A lot of people have mortgages that they can pay off every single month, and that's how they afford to buy a property. A lot of people have student loans, which is what they do to get university, higher education. There are kind of discussions about whether or not you should be paying these off aggressively or just work with the minimum payments on these. We'll leave that for another show, because some people describe this as a type of good debt, but we'll leave you on a cliffhanger when it comes to that topic. Now it's time for your audience questions. Every week you guys DM us on Instagram. We are under the handle at That Money Show, surprise surprise. And you can also message us live whilst you're watching the stream if you are watching us live on TikTok, and ask us a question about money, because this is the place for non-judgmental money questions and answers. The things you've always been too embarrassed to ask, I will answer them, because I don't think any money question is too embarrassing, because I've probably asked it and there are plenty of people that want it to be asked on their behalf. So let's start off with Nelly, who said, what happens if I'm a freelancer and I've missed the tax return deadline? So for those of you who don't know, the digital tax return deadline was on the 31st of January, the one that's just gone. In fact, it's every single one. And that counted for your tax year ending in April 2024, so the 5th of April 2024. And if you've missed it, you are subject to some penalties. The first thing I would say is do not panic. If you have missed it due to mitigating circumstances, so, you know, there were things out of your control, contact HMRC. The wait line might be really long. I apologise. Well, I don't apologise. It's not my fault, but they apologise, I guess, I hope. And explain your scenario, and they might be able to waive all of the fees. If you've just been late due to negligence, or you weren't really aware of what's going on and you just missed it, you might have an initial £100 fee, fixed penalty, plus interest, which applies even if you didn't have any tax to pay. Because you also have to tell them if you don't have to do a self-assessment, if you've been doing self-assessments in prior years. Okay? If you're over 3 months late, which we're not right now, there are further additional daily penalties. For example, sometimes £10 a day might be charged up to a maximum of £900. And then after 6 months, there's a further penalty. After 12 months, there's an even further penalty. So we're currently in, it's been 10 days. My idea is do not panic. Work with an accountant as soon as possible to get it paid off, to stop that charge from being even higher. Number two, Sammy, what have you got for me? Well, you have asked, when it comes to deposits when renting a house or a flat, what are my rights when I'm leaving the property and my landlord is charging me for things that I dispute? For example, they say I didn't clean the property well enough. Okay, so you've got a few possibilities. Number one, of course, you negotiate with your landlord until you come to an area of compromise. I've literally just gone through this with my own landlord. I moved out a month or two ago. I disagreed with their charge and I've managed to lower the fee to something that I'm content with and I'm happy to agree to. That's the ideal scenario. I mean, ideally, they don't charge you for anything. But if they do charge you, then you have to just be content with what it is and understand, you know, there's two perspectives on everything. Important to say, guys, by the way, wear and tear, you do not have to pay for just expected wear and tear. So just remember that. But you do have to leave it in the same condition that you found it. If that doesn't work and you are and you're what's the word for it? Deposit. Sorry, just lost it for a second. But your deposit was protected by a scheme, which most of them have to be these days. Most of those schemes offer a dispute resolution service for free. So you go to them. They're the ones that are holding your deposit, and they will come in, make an evaluation, and come up with a number themselves. That is kind of the next step of action if you really cannot come to an agreement with your landlord. And then the final step is you go take them to small claims court, and a decision will be made there. But once you go to small claims court, it starts to cost. There's fees involved with that. So those are kind of your three-step process. Ideally, try and kind of get it sorted at the first one. It'll be the easiest one to resolve. That's the one that I decided to solve myself. But do push back. Don't just accept the price they give you if you genuinely disagree with it. If they are right and you did break everything in the property, you do kind of have to pay for that. And finally, from Robert, who said, can you explain to me what the Government Child Trust Fund is and if I have one? Okay, nice and simple. A Child Trust Fund is a long-term, tax-free savings account for children that were born between the 1st of September 2002 and the 2nd of January 2011. I'll repeat those dates. The 1st of September 2002 and the 2nd of January 2011. And you can find a Child Trust Fund if you are a parent of the child or if you are over 16, which, let me just do some math. You were born in 2011, the latest, so a lot of people are still turning 16 in that bracket right now and will start to be able to find them for themselves. So these schemes were closed in 2011. But if you did have one open, they were normally opened with around £250 or so. And I believe around 70 to 80% of children in that bracket did have one opened for them. So you can go type in Find My Child Trust Fund on the internet and you might have a little bit of cash waiting for you. What you do with that cash is up to you. But if you listen to this show, I bloody hope it's a sensible, sensible thing that you do. You know, savings, investments, put it towards a bit of future you, invest in a skill, all that kind of fun stuff. I won't tell you what to do with your money, but you should know. This is That Money Show after all. Anyway, I want to say a quick thank you to all of our guests. We had Riley, the mortgage man, calling all the way in from Iceland whilst about to go and have a look at a waterfall. So that is commitment if I've ever seen it. We had Sarah, who taught us about debt and gave us some free resources so that you guys do not get scammed and know the best potential steps if you are in debt or want to talk to somebody. And as always, you can download the FUBAR Radio app to listen to us live every single week. You can listen to us back on every podcasting platform. You can DM us on at That Money Show on Instagram with any question you have, and we will read it out next week and try and answer it. I've been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show, and you are now better with your money.
FUBAR Radio.